he did that by taking an axe to the door to gain entry into the home.
A fugitive is arrested in Sleep Mute. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Unalakleet residents continue looking for two lost boaters after the official search is called off.
And as soon as the weather lets up and permits us to use ocean-going craft, we'll make our way down to the site of where the boat has been located.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Federal Aviation Administration, setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports, faa.gov/go/flyalaska, or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. And by Era Alaska. For more than 30 years, Era Alaska has been transporting packages across the state, business documents, medical supplies, even family pets. More details at flyera.com or talk to your local Era Alaska agent. Era Alaska, bringing Alaskans together.
A fugitive wanted for kidnapping and rape has been apprehended after eluding troopers for 2.5 days. The incident happened in Sleep Mute, a village on the upper Kuskokwim River. KYUK's Sophie Ivan reports from Bethel.
22-year-old Colton Zakhar is accused of kidnapping and raping a female in the early morning hours on Wednesday. Aniak-based troopers say Zakhar broke into a female's residence. Spokesperson Megan Peters.
He did that by taking an axe to the door to gain entry into the home.
Alaska State Troopers in the Aniak post are investigating. They say once Zakhar got into the home, he beat up a woman, dragged her out of her home and down a trail leading to the Kuskokwim River, where he proceeded to rape her. The victim has since been treated for non-life-threatening injuries at the hospital in Bethel. Troopers and a United States Deputy Marshal flew to Sleep Mute Thursday. They believe Zakhar's family members helped him elude the troopers. Again, Megan Peters.
They took him to a wooded mountainous region on the far side of town. Troopers were unable to apprehend him, even though they spent about 6 hours out in the woods trying to find him.
Zakhar was considered a dangerous fugitive due to the nature of the attack and his previous criminal record. That includes an attempted murder charge in February of 2010 and a burglary charge in October of last year. Troopers say they received a good tip this morning about Zakhar's whereabouts.
We got out there and were fortunately able to take the man into custody.
That is all the information troopers are releasing at this time. In Bethel, I'm Sophie Ivan.
While the Coast Guard and Alaska State Troopers have suspended searches in the Norton Sound for a couple missing since Monday, local search efforts in Unalakleet continue today. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin in Nome has the story.
The Coast Guard suspended their search for 41-year-old David Sloco and 48-year-old Debbie Kamikdok, and troopers have also suspended their aerial searches. However, search and rescue teams in Unalakleet and other communities coordinated efforts today in an afternoon meeting. The Unalakleet Search and Rescue and Alaska State Troopers held a meeting at 1 o'clock this afternoon to organize resources, people, equipment, and even food. Mitty Johnson has been a volunteer with search and rescue for a number of decades in Unalakleet and helps to coordinate search and rescue efforts. He says the ocean has been rough from the persistent north winds, and further, north-northwest winds are pushing water out of the Norton Sound, creating a very low tide. These conditions have hampered search efforts by boat. Johnson says volunteers started searching today by four-wheelers and ATVs earlier this afternoon.
People are on the ground right now, going in both directions. And as soon as the weather lets up and permits us to use ocean-going craft, we'll make our way down to the site of where the boat has been located.
Johnson says they expect winds to diminish by this evening or early morning tomorrow. He says searchers today are still holding on to hope that they'll find Sloco and Kamikdok alive.
In cases where maybe that doesn't happen. All the other efforts are much appreciated, I know, by communities and by families, because it helps with closure.
Unalakleet Search and Rescue has set up a command center at the community hall.
We do ask people that even if they can't go out into the field and they want to help by bringing baked goods or food for searchers and stuff, or they just want to come and support each other, the hall will be open 24 hours a day until we're accomplished what we're set out to do.
Johnson says the Alaska State Troopers are helping with coordination and are also funding search efforts and paying for the gasoline needed for both boats and four-wheelers used in the search efforts. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
The University of Alaska Board of Regents have voted 9-1 to increase tuition. The board today approved what the university system is calling the lowest increase in more than a decade. Meeting in Juneau, the board approved UA President Pat Gamble's proposal to raise tuition by 2% for resident undergraduates and a 4% increase for non-resident undergrads. Regents also approved a 2% increase to the graduate, resident, and non-resident rate. This would apply to all UA campuses and take effect beginning in the fall of 2013. The university says an undergraduate full-time student enrolled in 15 credits should expect an increase of $45 to $60 per semester. The increase would be $105 to $204 per semester for out-of-state full-time undergraduates. This week, the Anchorage Assembly passed an ordinance that will impact how building plans are approved. The ordinance allows builders to have single-family and two-family residential construction plans okayed by privately contracted engineers rather than through the municipal process. Officials say it will speed up the permitting process. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The ordinance passed by the Anchorage Assembly this week allows builders to bypass the municipal building process and instead go through a privately contracted engineer to get the go-ahead. Assembly member Adam Trombley wrote the ordinance. He says he introduced it at Tuesday's Assembly meeting for several reasons.
I did it, number one, to make it more efficient, reduce the size and scope of government, and make things less expensive for consumers.
The Assembly passed the ordinance 9-2, with Assembly members Harriet Drummond and Elvie Gray Jackson the no votes. Trombley says he hopes the new ordinance will help speed up construction of single-family and two-family residential units, of which there is a shortage. Mayor Dan Sullivan admits the building plan approval process can be cumbersome.
The main concern you hear from builders is just time. It's very time-consuming sometimes to get into the municipal process. You get into the queue behind, many plans in front of you, and if a reviewer has a very troublesome set of plans, then it takes longer and yours is sitting in the queue.
Sullivan emphasized that the new law only applies to plan review, not to actual construction. He says construction will still be inspected by city officials, and the municipality will still have the final word.
We still, at the city level, will do the inspection out in the field as the house is being built. Our inspectors will go out to make sure that from the foundation up to the roof that it does comply with code.
Sullivan added that private plan review is already in place in areas such as Chugiak, Eagle River, Girdwood, Indian, Bear Valley, and Stuckagan Heights, and the new ordinance just allows it in the Anchorage Bowl. The ordinance applies only to single-family and two-family residential construction plans and only to new applications. It went into effect as soon as it was approved and is valid until December 31st, 2015. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a seldom heard statement about school lunch.
I love broccoli when it's cooked, but I don't like fresh broccoli.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, NA. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com.
An Alaska scientist whose observations of drowned polar bears help galvanize the global warming movement has been reprimanded for improper release of government documents. An Interior Department official says emails released by Charles Monet were cited by a federal appeals court in decisions to vacate approval of an oil company's Arctic exploration plan. The official, Walter Cruikshank, says in a memo that an inspector general's investigation contained findings that Monet had improperly disclosed internal government documents. He also says the investigation made other findings in regards to Monet's conduct, but that he wasn't taking action on those. Monet was briefly suspended last year during an inspector general's investigation into a polar bear research contract he managed. Despite last week's flood emergency, the Matanuska-Susitna borough election will proceed as scheduled on next Tuesday, October 2nd. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has the story.
Incumbent borough mayor Larry DeVilbiss has held the seat since a special election in January of 2011 after the former mayor stepped down. DeVilbiss has served two terms on the borough assembly. His family's Wolverine Farm specializes in carrots and helped bring the first organic certifications to Alaska. But the mayor, farmer, and beef cattle rancher says he favors big industrial projects for the borough.
They are key to our economic future, really, because I really would like to see the borough move from being a bedroom community into a community that has an economic base that provides local jobs. And, of course, the port out at Port McKenzie is major on that, and the rail extension that goes down there, and the bridge, the Kubota Bridge. And I support all of those.
DeVilbiss has served as borough planning commissioner, road supervisor, and had two terms on the school board. He says borough finances are in good shape, with Matsu voters approving bonds last year covering 5 years of new schools and $64 million in local road projects. DeVilbiss also sponsored Proposition 2 on the borough ballot, which would add an additional $20,000 in exemptions for property owned by seniors and disabled veterans. He says the additional exemption fights inflation for those who are on a fixed income. DeVilbiss says the biggest challenge facing the borough.
Outside groups and environmental groups that don't want to see the rail extended, and I imagine when we start construction on the bridge, it'll be the same story.
Opponents of development rallied behind a recent move for borough support of a health impact study concerning coal development in the borough. DeVilbiss, as mayor, could not vote on the issue, but he says he would not have supported it anyway. The issue highlights the growing rift in the valley. More recent residents are increasingly vocal about keeping the area free of development. And DeVilbiss's challenger, Mark Masteller, has a long green history. A former head of Bioneers Alaska and a clean energy advocate, Masteller now directs the UAA Matsu Campus Renewable Energy Department. Masteller says the recent flood highlights some problems with borough spending.
The emergency response reserve account was drained about 80% from where it was 2 years ago down to about $500,000. And in the last few days with this flood event, we've pretty much spent all that. And we've still got 9 months left to go now in our fiscal year.
Masteller has served as the Alaska Director of Cascadia Green Building Project and as the Executive Director of the Alaska Center for Appropriate Technology. He agrees that the Port McKenzie rail extension is needed, although he questions where the funding is going to come from. Masteller says he'd like to see more professional and technical service industries enticed into the Matsu.
Those are smaller things, but they can contribute to a stable growth in our economic diversity instead of kind of waiting for some big project to happen that requires decisions from state or federal agencies or big investment decisions by private companies, et cetera. Those things are coming, they may happen, but they're usually long-term out there, and we need to do something now, and we have more control over those smaller projects that we can promote internally.
Masteller says he's undecided on Prop 2 because there's been no discussion of how to fill the budget hole when the property tax is not collected. Matsu voters will also decide on borough school board seats A and B.
I'm Ellen Lockyer.
4 out of Southeast Alaska's 5 largest cities will also choose mayors on Tuesday. 2 have incumbents on the ballot, while the other 2 will choose among newcomers or politicians rejoining the race. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Regular meeting 2012-22 will please come to order. I ask that you all rise and join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
That's Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello presiding over one of his final assembly meetings. He's termed out after serving more than a decade as the capital city's chief elected official. That means the community will choose a new mayor in the October 2nd municipal election. So will Wrangell, and Sitka and Ketchikan each face a choice between an incumbent and one or more challengers. The winners, if they haven't already served, will soon find that the job involves a lot more than chairing meetings, cutting ribbons, and greeting visiting dignitaries.
It's a terrible job.
That's Kathy Wasserman, who has a sense of humor despite serving as mayor of Pelican and Kasan and on Sitka's assembly.
It's not a terrible job. It's enjoyable, but, you know, for the most part, it doesn't pay, and it's got a lot of icky stuff that goes with it.
Wasserman runs the Alaska Municipal League and has been president of the statewide Conference of Mayors. She says her biggest challenge in elected office was balancing demands for services with the need to rein in spending.
In Pelican, sometimes it would snow, you know, 6 inches. And you can bet at 3 o'clock in the morning, someone would call me and say, "You haven't plowed the boardwalk." And I used to think, "My gosh, it snowed 6 inches. We live in Alaska. Put on boots." Now, you can bet that sometimes those same people will be saying, "Why are our costs going up like this?"
It's not all arguments and late-night phone calls. Wasserman says mayors can advance issues they think are important or at least slow down the progress of those they don't like. But to be successful, they have to work well with others.
You can't afford to say, "I'm sorry, I'm running things." That's just not the way public service works. And unlike a private company where you are the CEO, you actually work for those people who are complaining. So you have to take their thoughts, you know, as part of your decision making.
This regular meeting of the Wrangell Borough Assembly will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Assemblymember Don McConaughey, followed by an invocation.
That's Jeremy Maxand, Wrangell's outgoing mayor, at the start of one of his last meetings. Borough Assembly members Don McConaughey and Dave Jack are running for the seat at the head of the table. McConaughey has served as mayor before. Juneau also has 2 mayoral candidates, former Assembly member Merrill Sanford and League of Women Voters leader Cheryl Geeby. Sitka has 3 people running. Incumbent Cheryl Westover faces challenges from Assembly members Mim McConnell and Tor Christensen. And in Ketchikan, City Mayor Lou Williams III is opposed by frequent candidate Louis Army Jr. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Sitka.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers competitive interest rates with programs tailored for first-time homebuyers and home choice seminars that cover the details of purchasing and financing a home. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dan Bross. This week on AK, eating right. What comes to mind when you think of school lunch menus? Tater tots, sloppy joes, chocolate milk? Instead, imagine quinoa or brown rice, locally grown salad or roasted Brussels sprouts and baked fish, or homemade pizza with whole grain crust. That's the direction some U.S. schools are headed as they try to serve healthier meals and teach kids more about nutrition and exercise. 2 Alaska districts are getting some national recognition for their efforts on that front. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein has more.
Right now, I'm cutting open local-caught rockfish.
Carly Wells is food service director for the Petersburg School District.
Then we cut them into 3-ounce portions and bake them, put a little bit of seasoning on them, and put them in the oven and bake them for lunch.
There's also brown rice and an oriental vegetable medley. The vegetables are frozen today, but more and more, Wells has been trying to incorporate fresh, local, and homemade items into the school menu.
We're going to be seeing a lot more local fish on the menu as the year progresses. We got a grant from Alaskan Commerce for local caught and grown produce and fish, so we're going to be using those monies to buy better stuff.
Petersburg's 3 schools and 4 schools in Kenai are the first in Alaska to meet the criteria of the Healthier U.S. School Challenge. That's a voluntary Department of Agriculture initiative that encourages schools to improve their food service and physical education programs. Certification comes with a small cash award, in this case $500 per school. And schools have to go above and beyond new federal nutrition requirements to get it. But for Wells, it's worth it to put better food on kids' plates.
We're also trying to get things that you can recognize what's in them. Like when you have a chicken breast, you actually see the chicken breast and then the bread on the side, not a compound chicken nugget where it's kind of all kind of ground together. So you can actually see the different components of what makes up your meal. We're also introducing more fresh fruits and more fresh vegetables so that kids can really understand where their food comes from.
Some of Petersburg's food now comes from a school garden where students and staff grow lettuce and other vegetables. Wells and her 2 co-workers prepare and serve the meals for the town's 3 schools with pretty limited equipment.
Currently we only have 2 ovens that are up and running, so everything we do we have to bake it. So if we have soup, we actually bake our soup. To make pasta, we actually bake our pasta.
The district is looking for funds to build a regular kitchen, complete with an actual stovetop, an exhaust hood, and a large mixer. Right now, the staff sometimes mixes whole grain dough by hand in small batches when they make bread for the entire student body.
You can easily meet the federal guidelines by just opening up a box of pre-cooked anything and sticking it in the oven and warming it up. But here we want to aim a little higher. We want kids to really be nutritious. We want to limit the preservatives and have a better meal that they will understand, and when they raise their children, they'll want to cook them a homemade meal too.
Like Petersburg, the Kenai Peninsula Borough has been emphasizing a healthier menu, whole grains, more fruit and vegetables, but for a much larger district. Diane Buchanan is a student nutrition specialist.
We went with a vegetarian chili this year, and the kids love it. And we also have done a baked sweet potato and apple casserole that the kids just really love. We've also added a spinach strawberry salad that the kids are loving.
Alaska had been one of the few states with no schools in the Healthier U.S. Challenge, so State Child Nutrition Program Coordinator Joe Dawson says the certifications are very significant.
Both Kenai and Petersburg have been schools that we've known had really great programs, really great personnel heading up the school nutrition, innovative people. So, you know, we're not surprised to see these two be our first districts to apply for the challenge and to get this award.
It's another day back at Petersburg Elementary School, and the kids are eating a lunch of chicken fried pork. It's actually baked. Hash browns, gravy, applesauce, and a salad from the school garden. As they finish up, first graders Hannah, Sinjin, and Kate are happy to list their favorite vegetables.
Carrots. Carrots sometimes. Carrots.
Is that everybody's favorite?
Not everybody.
Not everybody? Yeah. Are there other vegetables that are good you have at lunch?
Sometimes broccoli.
I love broccoli when it's cooked, but I don't like fresh broccoli.
And do you have another vegetable that you like?
Broccoli.
Okay, broccoli and carrots it is. So what do you think, guys? You like your school lunches?
Mm-hmm. Yes!
Yeah!
Yeah!
I love the food!
In Petersburg, for AK, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're going to Cold Bay, a small community at the end of the Alaska Peninsula.
My name is George Lopez, and I'm the mayor of Cold Bay. You know, we're just a small community. I think I'm trying to remember the last census population that we had. I believe it was around 100 people. We got, I believe, the fourth largest runway in Alaska. This runway was built, and I can't remember back when. It's a
by the military. I think they had Fort Randall was built here during I believe World War II, and the state ended up, I believe, taking over the runway. You know, and our runway is 2 miles long. You know, we're not a fishing community. Most of our employment is either, you know, through the state or the federal government. You know, we don't have a harbor here like all the other communities. We just have a dock that we use to get our stuff, our supplies, groceries, or whatever, you know, off of the boats and, you know, to our store or to our houses. For fun, you know, we do fishing, hunting, trapping, you know, pretty much outdoor stuff. In the wintertime, you know, people go out and play in the snow, go cross-country skiing. This town is pretty quiet. Not much happens here. We have no law enforcement. Pretty safe. I got 2 9-year-olds who, you know, love being out here. They're playing outside. I think they got a little bit more freedom out here. So, you know, that's what I like about this place.
George Lopez is mayor of Cold Bay. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help from Matt Lichtenstein, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Sophie Ivan in Bethel, Lorelei Kanin in Nome, Daisha Eaton and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. Dan Bross was our AK guest host this week. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, celebrating 40 years as Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. The Project Management Institute will present 3 one-day seminars at the Petroleum Club of Anchorage, October 9th, 10th, and 11th. Expert Neil Whitten will present No-Nonsense Advice for Successful Projects, Let's Talk, More No-Nonsense Advice for Project Success, and The Gift of Wisdom, Work-Life Balance for Today's Managers. Learn to manage projects and more. Registration information at pmiak.org. This message sponsored by Project Management Institute, Alaska Chapter. The Kinnick Arm Bridge will create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.